Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we're going to go back to the 80s.
I know, it was such a great time. High school, college.
And what was the best concert you went to in the 80s?
I don't know, AC/DC, Rush, Neil Young, lots of. What about you? Well, you were in a boy band, weren't you?
No, I was not in a, for the 15th time, I was not in a boy band.
A hair band.
It was kind of a hair band,
okay,
yeah.
Kind of a, where was that?
I was in Canada. It was mm-hmm. a very exciting time.
Did they throw you out of Canada?
No, I'm sure they didn't. Let's stick to the topic of food and not my deportation.
Okay.
Imagine, close your eyes. Take yourself back to the first kitchen you're working in professionally in the 1980s. What was going on? What was exciting? What was the focus of that kitchen? What you were learning at that time?
We were working with fresh herbs, which was very interesting. We had basil and thyme and rosemary and.
But that seems so normal, right?
And it wasn't back then, and this is 1984. It was very unusual to have fresh herbs. We also had all different types of lettuces in our kitchen. So we had arugula, which no one was working with arugula. We had
Had you seen that on the Food Channel?
No, because the Food Channel didn't exist exactly.
Hadn't you seen the message board about fresh herbs on the internet?
Right. No. See, it's such a different time. So yeah, but and that's it was just such a growing time for me because and also Paul Prudhomme was really Cajun cooking had just become so popular and it was everywhere by that time. And I was working in a restaurant in Charleston, and so my chef was very interested in doing things like blackened fish and making gumbo and making shrimp Diane, which was one of Paul Prudhomme's famous dishes. So it was shrimp sautéed with a lot of spices, and you know we were working with a lot of spicy food, and I certainly hadn't grown up with spicy food, so that was a really interesting palate learner for me.
I think the big picture thing that people kind of don't realize often is that in the 70s, if you look at all the lists of the best restaurants around the country, they're all European chefs and only European origin,
right?
And absolutely, you know, it was so many were French. And in the 80s, all of a sudden, American chefs stood up and took notice of each other.
Yes.
And they actually started trying to fight to get product, you know, from farms and from suppliers. And that had not really ever happened at all before. You know, things would be shipped over from Europe, but I think that's the thing that people completely forget, that things like the fresh herbs or fresh lettuces didn't exist. And that this business now where chefs pay attention to other chefs in their city or, you know, and not just what's in this book or what they learned at this place in Europe or overseas or whatever it might be. It's not to discount all of those experiences, but the 80s was the time of American food actually becoming American food. In that creation of American food, who are some of the figures that you think of from that time that were, you know, the people that helped make things happen?
Alice Waters was so influential in, you know, really bringing vegetables to the forefront, and that included some of those lettuces. Because she made a demand. Whenever there's a demand, and then other chefs, as you say, pay attention and start following. And she really her kitchen, Chez Panisse, was a training ground for a lot of great chefs. Jeremiah Tower, Larry Forgione, a lot of great chefs came out of her space, and you know. Then they go off to demand the products again. So it multiplies. And all of a sudden, you know, we can get mescaline greens here in South Carolina, or you probably did in Maryland then. And those influences, along with a great French chef, Jean-Louis Paladin, who was the youngest three-star Michelin chef when he came to the United States. And he, I'm sure, was probably a little bit horrified by what was here in the markets because he couldn't even get shallots. I remember reading about that in one of his books. And
In the early 90s, I was doing helping what had become a disastrous opening for a restaurant in Atlanta for a company. And Jean-Louis was one of the two chefs, one of the two European chefs who were partners in that restaurant. And his entire battle was to get product. And while it was pretty disastrous economically for that particular restaurant, because we would have, you know, $400 of freight charges to get fresh raspberries from somebody in California, or, you know, or this, you know, and fish showing up, you know, just a whole swordfish showing up with no one knowing that it was coming and that sort of thing. But the amazing things, and that, like, not settling for,
he was always,
not having great product.
He was always trying to find the best product, and thanks to him, you know, we have a couple of major companies in our country that probably wouldn't have happened if it weren't for him. One of them is a mushroom company, and the other one is a major seafood company. And, you know, his demand for fish that he was used to working with, as well as American fish that was high quality. So he wasn't just asking for things that came from his country, but that were the best in our country. And I think that's the beauty of him. And we should be ever, all of us should be ever thankful to him for his contribution. And, you know, again, you know, you could talk about shallots, you can talk about chanterelle mushrooms, you can talk about anything that we can actually get now, he couldn't get here then. So that's one of the big changes that occurred in the 80s.
So what are five things you learned to do in the 80s that you still do, like you learned to do in the kitchens, that you still do now?
Well, I will say that I do occasionally blacken something. You know, it was kind of overdone in the 80s. That was sort of the shame about it. It was, you know, Paul Prudhomme did something that was really a wonderful dish that spoke to the culinary history of his family and his wife's family and New Orleans. And then it was just done everywhere. So I think it was just kind of overdone. But blackened fish is delicious. There's no question about it. It's an easy way to cook. It's a piece of red fish, which is it used to be at least, and an inexpensive fish that you just make a spice rub for. So you literally take a piece of fish with, you're not putting any oil or anything on the fish, and rubbing it with probably dried thyme, oregano, basil, cayenne pepper, black pepper, white pepper, just a spice rub. And it's kind of fun because when you blacken something, you do it on cast iron. So we would have these big cast iron sort of flat pans. And, you know, when you pop it on there, all the spices kind of shoot up to the stars a little bit. And it's a great way to eat a piece of fish. And obviously you need a fish that has a lot of flavor. But that's one of the things that, I mean, I would do that. I would do that today. And one of his other dishes is the shrimp Diane, which is shrimp sautéed with sort of that same. That's one of the things about that cooking. A lot of the same spices are used in a lot of the dishes. It's very, you know, you call celery, pepper, and green peppers and onions, the Holy Trinity in New Orleans cooking. There is a lot of repetition in the cooking. And once you kind of get that flavor profile down, you can make a lot of different dishes. I also make gumbo from then. And I'm not, you know, I think probably some of the things that we did on the rotisserie back then, which was very popular at that time as well, I don't know necessarily throughout the whole country, or even the wood-burning pizzas, you know, the pizzas, the way that they used to make all those sort of creative pizzas that were at that time very innovative. Those are things that are very valuable.
I mean, the 80s is the time when Wolfgang Puck blew up. Mm-hmm. You know, the Austrian chef who became such the iconic guy.
And who was a great working chef.
In the 70s and then in the 80s he blew up, but he definitely changed, pretty single-handedly changed Los Angeles food scene. And Los Angeles, it was never thought of as a food town at all.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And completely blew, which is kind of crazy to think about. Mm-hmm. As you know, as long as that town has been a, like, wealthy and influential town in American style and it's funny to have an Austrian guy come in and blow the whole thing up, doing food that people did not either associate with Austria or the States necessarily.
Yeah.
But doing it with a great sort of, you know, with, honestly, to be cliche about it, a pioneer spirit.
Right. Well, and also I think he was trying to, I mean, don't you think it was just all about kind of freshness? You know, here he was in California with, you know, all these wonderful vegetables that are now growing everywhere. And, you know, he had all these things that is.
It was kind of fresh and irreverent and right now.
Yeah.
And very right now.
Very innovative.
I think one of the things that happened in the 80s also is that the style of dining changed. There was only either, you know, the diner, the fast food, the very quick and pretty lousy, maybe warm, but pretty lousy, you know, style of service, and very formal, you know, French restaurants or very fancy steakhouse, and you're sort of scared to death to go in and be judged.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that entire category in between came up that was very sort of spirited and had
American.
Some kind of thematic and a style, and it was a very American way of going about the restaurant business.
Right. It was almost freeing. And where I did my apprenticeship, we had 90% California wine cellar, which was a very innovative idea at that time. And, you know, we had
well, and in
wine dinners,
Charleston
too.
Was dominated by European chefs. at that time.
People, oh, absolutely.
People think of Charleston as being this place to go for low country cooking now. When low country cooking, when you were working there,
was at a diner or a roadside place or someone's home.
And didn't exist in the restaurants at all.
It really didn't.
It was all European restaurants. So where you were working was one of the first real new American restaurants in the U.S.
It was. And as I said, the chefs there were just super creative and very... had big open minds, and the man that ran the front is who I now buy my grits from, Glenn Roberts, who's been super influential in preserving all different kinds of Southern foods, and just is an amazing man. That whole attitude of that front of the house staff and the kitchen staff was, you know, what can we do? What can we get done? I mean, it was very innovative and very open-minded.
Yeah, there's a certain why not spirit to cooking at that time, and it was definitely... it was definitely all about the States. It was Southwestern cooking was never thought of as a style or as an influence in the U.S. until the 80s. Then all of a sudden, things were showing up on menus with a Southwest or a Tex-Mex feeling to it. The idea of California cuisine showed up all of a sudden on menus in the 80s. The regional American cooking, it wasn't just, it's America. Have a hamburger and shut up. It's America. So where are you? And what do they cook there? And what's the big deal?
Well, and I know, my chef, one of my other chefs that I worked for at that time, was very into using whatever was local. He just wanted to get the best he could too. I mean, I think that's what makes a great chef, is just trying to get the best product in. And, he was from Argentina, so it would have been much easier for him to fall back on his own style of cooking rather than to really try to, he really tried to incorporate low country cooking into his menu and low country products. So, you're in Charleston, that's what he was doing. And I think one of the other things that really changed was the menu style. I think when you had classic, when you go from classic French cooking where, you have a name, this dish is, Sole, Colbert, whatever it is, it's a sauce has a definition. Everything has to be exactly what it says it is. And then you go into Nouvelle French cooking, and there was an opening of the spirit there for the French people, for the French chefs. And then you have this evolution in American cooking.
But then here
cooking.
In the '80s, we kind of put a motor on it.
Exactly, and it was just
we gave it some juice, we gave it some energy, and we started doing it for a shorter attention span too, mm-hmm. which is our spirit. When we come back to Foreman & Wolff on Food & Wine, we'll be talking about. How the American wine palate evolved in the 80s, more what happened, what actually happened on the plate in the 80s, what we'd like to still see around, what we're really glad we left behind, and all that and more in Foreman & Wolff on Food & Wine.